I guess we should start here. Feeling any better about the Browns being 1-4 today?
Nope.
Yeah, neither am I.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah, the 48-hour rule?
I
slept on it a couple times.
Should we push it? Should we push it to 72 hours?
I might need 96 on this one.
Because this isn't, because it's not just about the Washington loss, in which, let's remember, they quit and they got blown out. And honestly, we didn't even get like a phenomenal game from Jaden Daniels because his stats are pretty mid if we're going to, you know, go Gen Alpha about it. But no, I mean, it's that. And then it's the fact they're 1-4. And it sure seems like everybody's saying all the PR spinny kind of things. And nobody really seems all that interested or worried about actually fixing the things, the elementary things that are sinking the Cleveland Browns.
No, but Stefanski's getting right back to the drawing board.
Well, that's good.
We'll have this figured out. Maybe we can have Jerry Jeudy running more sprints after practice.
I actually know. No, this is, no? You need to get a new drawing board.
The problem was the drawing board.
Maybe this one is a whiteboard and Kevin works better on chalk. Right?
I could be.
Yeah. Maybe he doesn't like fully unlock his genius unless there's like that white powder on the easy there.
The LeBron powder.
The LeBron powder on, you know, just
he's
going
to toss it up in the air too before.
And you're like, wait, is that an X or is that a Z? I don't know because my hand just scraped across it. I think we just figured out. So it really does. So it's so funny we're talking about this. I don't know that it's that funny. But what really does annoy me is it's not like, I think there is a gross oversimplification where it's just Deshaun, right? Even people who just flat out do not believe in Deshaun will say it's not just Deshaun.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been saying for a minute now, it's how you're losing that pisses me off. And I think we've gotten to the point where it's not even about effort so much so. Well, the Sunday was about effort, but it's also about you're just losing in the dumbest, most elementary way. Like we could bring Ken Carmen off the Streetsboro Rockets, you know, sixth grade field. And Ken could coach up some of the crap that's going on right now. And it's happened repeatedly. Even in the one win you had in Jacksonville, there were stupid little mistakes. Things such as, like, what is your assignment? Like, hey, there's a guy obviously blitzing here. Can someone call it out so we can, whether it's move the running back over, just get somebody in front of them. It is so far elementary in how they're screwing up. That annoys me more than just being 1-4.
Yeah, while also leading the league in penalties for several weeks of the season.
And drops. Do not forget the drops.
It's drops, it's penalties, and now we added sacks by 9 for Deshaun Watson over every other quarterback in the NFL. Like, we're leading the league in a lot of bad categories here.
So, we spent a lot of yesterday on Deshaun. We are going to spend a lot of this week on Deshaun.
Yeah.
Today is not about Deshaun. Today is about everything else. And so, coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, we're going to ask the, because I think the two biggest problems right now, I think it's fair to say that Deshaun might be one of the two biggest problems. The problem is nobody wants to look at the other problem. I do think, though, as we start with the defense, I don't know why Jim Schwartz is getting a pass 5 weeks into the season where...
Not a Peterlin pass, by the way. We need to make this abundantly clear.
Thank you. Thank you. You know what?
In case someone was confused.
I don't want to sully the Peterlin pass here because you have not given him the Peterlin pass.
I told you in the beginning, we don't hand it out like it's candy at Halloween. Like, you got to earn a Peterlin pass.
That's true.
In the couple months now, have I given out a Peterlin pass? I don't think one has been gone.
When people see the Peterlin pass, it's like the Better Business Bureau sticker. Right?
That's right.
Or it's like a guarantee on like any sort of product you buy.
Yeah,
like,
100% back, money back guarantee.
Wait. So if this thing falters in the first 3 years, I get a free TV and my money back. That's the Peterlin pass.
How can they promise me that those socks are lifetime and they're going to last for another 70 years? How can they promise that?
That's true.
How do they do that?
You don't have to worry about that with a Peterlin pass because when you've said it, you've thought it out and it's there. So it's not a Peterlin pass. But it is wild to me that we've talked this much about Deshaun. We've talked this much about Amari. We've talked this much about Kevin and Ken Dorsey and the O-line. And we continue to look at the defense and we kind of just skip over the fact that, one, they sucked something awful for 3 quarters of the 4 quarters. Yeah, they were great in the 1st quarter. Don't give a damn.
Mm-hmm.
You were awful in the 3 quarters that followed. And I know it doesn't look like from a scoring perspective that they've been awful, but all the little rudimentary things that you can do to be just good defensively, tackling, being short tackling, limiting missed tackles, swarm tackles, little communication things. There's like seven other things we could mention. All those things are the things that's stopping the Browns defense from being consistent. And it just feels like we're just a lot of people are just chalking it up to, well, it's because Deshaun on the offense can't stay on the field.
Well, and I feel like in today's NFL, I don't know why. I mean, we're so offense orientated, but think about what happened with the Chiefs. And the Chiefs are fresh on everyone's mind because you probably watched last night's game. Do you know the last time the Chiefs allowed 30 points in a game? Browns have done it twice already this year, Cowboys, and then obviously last week. You know the last time the Chiefs allowed 30 points in a game?
I can't honestly think of one.
The Super Bowl.
Okay.
Not this last Super Bowl, the one against the Eagles.
Oh.
It has been 26 games since they allowed 30 points in a season.
And that's good.
That's good.
Okay.
You want that.
Yeah. Some might say that's like elite.
Yeah. Since the start of last season, they are first in points per game. They are third in yards per game. They are fourth in sacks. Defensive EPA per drive, they're fourth as well. Like Mahomes can struggle because their defense has been that dominant. Like, that was the whole post-game show with Mahomes last night. Was like, oh, I think people woke up to the idea that the Chiefs' defense has been good for a really long time. And it's like, yeah, he doesn't have to be great. That's what we were promised here, Nick. We were promised the idea that you didn't have to be great at the quarterback spot because the defense was going to be so dominant. And so far through five games, it's not that they haven't been dominant. They've been very below average.
So it's interesting we're having this conversation because Rodney McLeod, who, again, I cannot say enough about a guy who this is, what, his second year here, who every single Tuesday gives an hour of his time to come in studio, and he has kept that commitment when a lot of other athletes would have not done that. I think him showing up every week and talking about this is wildly impressive. If he doesn't do it in the future, I will then call him out. But for now, no, this is wildly impressive.
I remember, we had the conversation, me and you, off the air at one point, being like, is Rodney going to show up the next day?
Yeah.
And we've seen enough athletes not show up the next day.
Was that the Dallas game? Was that the Giants game?
I'm pretty sure that was the Dallas game. We might have had the same convo after the Giants game, too.
Do you think it's like a weekly reminder, have the should Rodney show up today conversation after what we saw on Sunday?
Every week in my mind, it's what I think about. And listen, think about it, for instance, like Up and Adams. Kay Adams does every week with Devontae Adams. That's like a weekly thing that she does.
Yeah.
Devontae Adams wasn't there today.
Yeah.
Why?
He's no longer the Up and Adams part of Up and Adams. It's only K.
It's it still counts, though. You still have one Adams.
That's true.
So the show still works.
But you don't have Adams.
I don't know. Was Aaron Rodgers, did he do it in his spot with McAfee today?
That I don't remember. Oh, there's no way in hell. There's no way in hell.
Right, because the idea is most athletes just skip out on these moments.
His athlete.
It was like a big parade for him.
What the hell? No, his agent. There's no way his agent let him. Because his agent spent all morning being like, guys, this wasn't Aaron Rodgers' fault. Oh, no, this was, what is it, Christopher Johnson or Woody Johnson? I don't know the difference between my Johnsons here. But, no, like, this is one of the Johnsons' decisions, not Aaron Rodgers. Okay, bub, sure. But Rodney McLeod was on the morning show with the Morning Boys, Ken and Anthony, today. And one of the things he got into was the emphasis on not giving up big plays for this defense.
I mean, I think going into any game, you want to eliminate explosives, eliminate big plays. That is something that, you know, we do focus on. There's direct correlation with explosives to winning. You minimize that and you more than likely come up on the positive side of things. So I think for us defensively, it's more about how do we play a complete 60 minutes of ball. You know, Jim came in the other day and he talked about how, you know, 58 of, you know, of our 67 plays were giving up an average of, you know, 2.8 or 9 yards. But then you have those set of plays right there that accumulated to maybe 200 worth of yards. And, you know, for us as a elite defense, those are the things that we have to avoid and eliminate from the game in order to give our team the best chance possible. Whether our team is scoring 40 points or they're scoring 14, our job is to prevent them from scoring. And at the end of the day, if our offense gives us 3, that should be enough for us. And that's our standard, right? Other teams don't have that level of standard, but that's what we created last year.
All right, so that is Rodney McLeod. And I think a lot of teams in the NFL are saying we have to eliminate, we'll live with the intermediate plays, we'll live with the underneath, but we don't want to get hit on the explosive plays. The problem with the Browns defense is it feels like both things inevitably end up happening.
How much awareness did that comment lack?
Not as much as
so delusional.
Not as much as the one we're going to play in about 10 minutes. Sounds like it lacks.
I understand it. He comes on the radio station again. Applaud to him to even showing up. But like, what are we doing here? How can you possibly tell us that's what you think right now? We're not stupid. We watch the games. We see what's happening here. Does he? But I don't think he means it. I think he genuinely believes what he's saying. I think he genuinely thinks that they're one of the best defenses in the NFL, and he hasn't been able to wipe away the moniker that they had last season. He hasn't adjusted. He's like, oh, they told me I was great last year. I guess I'm great again this year.
I don't think it's just him.
No,
I don't know that he does believe it. I think he's saying it because that's what they're saying, and I think not saying it would open up a caveat. I think they keep saying it and it's not true. And I think that's very telling about the need to feel important and the ego. Honestly, it's the ego of the defense.
It's not a lie if you believe it.
I feel like last year we started to see some of the pieces crumble. But final six games, but they still walked around. They went into that Texans game, the postseason game, Nick, and they acted as if C.J. Stroud wasn't going to light them up. And within minutes, we all knew watching that game that C.J. Stroud not only had him figure it out, but C.J. Stroud, he knew exactly what to do there.
216-474-0092. So as we start the show, good day, everybody. I tried it. It didn't work, but I did try
it. Didn't fail.
Okay, that's right. Because we didn't fail because we at least tried.
Hey, we're volume shooters around here,
that's
okay?
True.
You just keep taking the shot.
Look at my TikTok. At Nick Wilson says, TikTok. Brett Boone, Odyssey MLB Insider. He's joining us as long as the Gardos are in the playoff four. So another hit today at 240. That was a very sloppy way of wording that. Brett Boone at 240. We've got Jason Stanford, who you guys have heard on the station recently, hosting with me. He's going to call in at 340. We're going to go ahead and look at the Guardians. Loss in the playoff game there. The series now tied at one game apiece as we shift to Detroit for game three starting tomorrow. Then we got the 5 at 5, predictably at 5. Albert Breer at 520. But we're going to start here. Why is Jim Schwartz getting a pass for the Brown struggles? And the word elite was thrown around a lot today. Rodney McLeod did answer on that. That's next on 92.3 The Fan. I think it goes back to the idea of you can give up chunk plays. You can do the bend but don't break philosophy, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And you can then do the we're not going to... So basically, we're going to limit all the chunk plays. Or you can do... We might let up a couple big plays, but we're going to be so consistent and dominant in our technique, in our focus, in everything, in our assignments, that basically we negate the impact of those big plays. Right now... There's still too many big plays. And it should, I'll be honest with you, the defense is worse than I thought it would be. The offense is worse than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
But I think the defense, there's really no excuse because the defense is the healthier side of the ball. It seems like ego is the reason that they're not being the defense they were last year.
Well, so I'm trying to figure out if the defense part of this can actually be fixed. Myles Garrett is playing half of the snaps. I think he played like 72% this past weekend, so that was an uptick to what we saw. But like, is MJ Emerson going to get out of quicksand? Like, what are we going to be able to do there? Is all of a sudden it going to be fixed, the idea that you have a lot of injuries on the defensive line, different things that have popped up? Like the offense seems shot. The offense seems like we're not going to be able to fix that anytime soon. How far away is this defense from going back to the defense that we thought was dominant last year, or was the dominant defense last year just fool's gold?
It's a trick question because they're doing this during the worst part of their schedule. So they're doing this against Daniel Jones,
yeah,
and Gardner Minshew and Trevor Lawrence, and like the Dak thing, Dak is great, whatever. But like, I know Jaden Daniels is a great young quarterback. You had plenty of opportunities to get after him and limit those plays. It was the mistackling. It was the little things of defense. So the problem is when it seems like they're doing the little things of defense, all of a sudden there's a huge play inexplicably that happens because of something that has nothing to do with the little things. It's just, well, your man got beat. It's like the simple mistakes that add up to the big mistakes, and all of a sudden, you look pretty damn average.
I'm just trying to figure out what happened from last year to this year. Are they that demoralized because the offense isn't able to contribute at all? Is that what's happening?
I think that's in our minds. Listen, I'm
not buying into it, but I do think it's something that some people would throw out there.
Well, yeah, but I think that's a very normal thing for the defense to go, well, when's the offense going to... But honestly, if that's what they're doing... then it's a massive failure of leadership.
Because they won Deshaun games last year. That Tennessee game last year, Derrick Henry was held to 20 yards on 11 carries. You shut out the Cardinals.
Yeah.
You're playing Clayton Tune, but you shut out the Cardinals.
And can I tell you the other thing that bugs me about
this game? Week one last year.
Yeah.
Joe Burrow didn't throw for 100 yards. He threw for 82 yards.
Well, and so...
You win that game on the defense.
But consistency was the problem last year. And so now you're not counteracting dominant performances with a couple of bad oopsie games that then you kind of have to eke out with the offense, right? Now you're just getting the consistency issues. But like, here's the other problem that I really have with giving the defense in Jim Schwartz a pass. This was the reason why you supposedly traded Baker. Well, Baker and Myles Garrett's relationship was far beyond the pale. They could not be in the same locker room. That was a line that's been thrown out here recently.
Yeah, and it was. You got the vibes of that. At the time, I remember thinking about how testy it seemed between the two.
So,
and it was the unspoken thing that was said out loud.
You get one of those. And that's not to, I'm not trying to go right at Miles, but like you get one of those. If okay, well now I don't like the new quarterback. All right, at some point you got to get along.
But Miles did pay off his end of the bargain, right? That's it. You win a defensive player of the year last year. You are, in essence, paying off why you went with Miles and you continued to stay down that road just a little bit.
It doesn't excuse, and I'm not trying to make it just about Miles, but it doesn't excuse then turning around. If that were under the working hypothesis of, well, it's because the defense is fed up with the offense, get over it.
I just wonder if we overrated them last year, and this is all this is. And in turn, then they overrated themselves last year, and they ran back with a defense that was not nearly as good as what we thought they
were. But they haven't played anybody. My problem with that is, if this was Mahomes or Burrow or Lamar or Jalen or Justin Herbert, if they were who were cooking you right now, and it was like I could totally be on board. But the guys that are beating you right now are the guys that you kicked the holy crap out of last year.
That's what goes with... Yeah, well, but last year down the stretch, it changed. And this is where I got a little worried about it. Last year down the stretch, it was about the Rams game on is when it felt like... And that's when Flacco started throwing for 300 yards and the offense kind of came to life a little bit. But it was about the Rams game on where it kind of felt like the defense... It just wasn't the same. I remember last year, they allowed 30 points a game on the road, Nick. They were dominant at home. 10 points a game at home. We've done that split a million times. But it was not all like sunshine and rainbows within that defense.
Well, but I think that there were consistency issues. This is, they're actually being consistent.
It's consistently being bad.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. 216-474-0092. Are you giving Jim Schwartz a pass in all this? Because when we talk about things like tackling, missed assignments, MJ Emerson getting cooked, leaving MJ Emerson on Malik Nabers to get cooked for two touchdowns and 100 plus yards, and then at halftime going, should we put that Denzel guy on him? Like, these to me are mistakes of arrogance and ego and bravado. Well,
did he graduate the defense a little bit too early? Like, maybe we tried getting our high school diploma and we weren't ready to graduate from high school. Remember, like, all offseason, he kept doing that baseball analogy, right?
Mm-hmm.
We got to take our fastball, and now we're next year in year two. We're going to do the curveball. We're going to throw a slider in there because he loves talking baseball.
Yeah.
Jim Schwartz is a big baseball
Everybody's
guy, apparently.
Saying, big baseball guy.
And he tried throwing in a slider, and it doesn't work.
Well, it works
to the fastball, maybe.
It works as well as Emmanuel Clase slider in the ninth last night. Sorry, too soon. Too soon.
Got a little deep.
But I do think ego's a problem. And I'm not talking about Jim Schwartz.
Are we talking about the dances here? What are we talking about?
No,
attached to
I'm
ego?
Just saying, like,
or the fact that Rodney McLeod can talk about how they're like still an elite defense when they've shown no sign of it.
We're gonna get to that, but even Greg Newsom yesterday saying, "Oh no, missed tackles aren't a problem." It's like you can't say that. That sounds delusional. Like, okay, I understand that big picture. He made a couple good points in there, which are missed tackles are a problem in the NFL because it is a very skilled game now and it favors the offense. Totally get that. Also, swarm tackling is a way to avoid missed tackles. Also understand that. That doesn't mean that the missed tackles for your defense specifically aren't a freaking problem because I see it every damn week.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like that's the kind of thing where it's like, I understand the point you're making, but you negating the importance of missed tackles means you're talking in some way out your booty. And so Rodney McLeod was on with the Morning Boys earlier today. And I want to give Ken credit because right out of the 920 segment, he just ripped the Band-Aid off and said, people are saying you keep talking about this elite defense. Do you still think you guys are elite? And here's what Rodney had to say.
That's just our mindset. We feel like, you know, we're the best. And so for us, it's about us just living it and being about it, you know. And so our team needs us right now to be that elite defense that we know we're capable of and that we did last year. And so that's what it's going, you know, to take for us to be able to make this run, is for us to play at a high level, carry this team, do our job, and that's it. So I believe we're the best because of the players we have, the character guys that we have, and led by Jim Schwartz. We're going to get it done.
So I don't believe that he believes this, but I think he knows other people need to hear this. It's like the fragile ego thing, fragile masculinity. So I think this is Rodney perpetuating something of basically wishing it to be true.
I don't know. I think he might believe it. I really do. You've been around enough athletes. You understand how a lot of their brains work, and that a lot of them, they get to the NFL because they're just overly positive humans, and they have that mindset of I am going to be the best. I'm going to put in the work, and I'm going to be. And it usually works out for them. They're in the NFL for a reason. Rodney McLeod's in the NFL for a reason. It's just you can't tell the fan base this right now. We're seeing something way different on the field every week.
So I actually think we're saying the same thing, because I think you and I agree it's that overly inflated mindset. But I think Rodney, as a veteran on this team, is saying it because I think he realizes that this defense is a bit fragile and that they're at a state where I think they're at a critical state. Like, you know, everybody keeps talking about the big picture, which I understand. Is the offense, or is the season over? And some people just want it to be over because it's easier. If you just start with the season is over, then nothing can hurt you anymore. I totally understand that, right? This is a safe space. I'm not trying to trigger you.
Yeah.
But I think when it comes to the defense, this is the teetering point. You either get better from here, or you're going to just get worse from here. And it's so funny to hear people say, well, they can't get worse from here. Watch them. It's the NFL. When you lose hope in the NFL, or when you don't believe each other, or don't play for each other, any of these other things that are thrown out there. And if I hear, well, the Browns are a bunch of good guys, it's not about that. The Browns like each other. Darius and Donovan like each other. They don't like playing together.
Right, it's not enough.
Those are two different conversations.
Yeah, the problem I have is going into Sunday in the pregame, and we talked a lot about Deshaun and everything, but like, did anybody think that they were going to stop Jaden Daniels? Was there a person out there that legitimately thought the day was coming where Jaden Daniels just stunk up the joint?
I thought it was there for him. I think the first two drives showed that was possible.
I thought Deshaun against a really bad defense had to have a great day, and he should have been able to have a great day. But right now, I had no faith the defense was going to be able to stop him. And I don't know. I mean, Jalen Hurts isn't having the greatest season ever. What's going to happen 2 weeks from now when you take on Joe Burrow?
Yeah.
You
mean the guy who passed for 380 yards and lost?
And 5 touchdowns? Yeah, yeah. But is there any confidence that Joe Burrow won't go for that type of number against the Browns right now?
If you take out the 400 yards he's going to pass for and 5 touchdowns, the Browns defense will still be elite.
Yeah, yeah. Just that's all we have to do.
So you say you think he believes it.
I do.
I don't think he believes it, but I think he has to say it because I think that's what they're trying to preach into it internally.
He sounds like, to me right now, the guy that walks around acting like he's a millionaire and acting like he's got a really big house and nice cars and fancy everything, but you know has none of those things. That's what he acts like to me right there.
216-474-0092. Rodney McLeod says the defense is still elite. Is it time to stop calling the defense elite? More on that. But we got Brett Boone, Odyssey MLB insider. We'll ask him whether yesterday was the one that'll get away, or the one that got away from the Guardians. That's next on 92.3 The Fan. Throughout the Guardians postseason run, we've had our next guest on, and we're going to continue to have him on as the Guardians soldier on, hopefully, beyond the ALDS, nice. Maybe into the... See what I did there?
Yeah, nice.
Because that's exactly what I'm starting, by the way. You'll see in a moment. but all throughout the Guardians run here, and we're joined by Odyssey MLB insider Brett Boone. Insider calls presented by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Brett is also the host of the Brett Boone podcast, featuring the most notable names in Major League Baseball and around sports every week. Brett Boone now joins us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Brett, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Well,
just got off the flight. I'm running on empty.
Oh, man. Well, is this a... I'll save that. I have a question there, but because... Peterlin and I were reading your Wikipedia in the break, and your Wikipedia says that you are a descendant of Daniel Boone. Is that a for sure thing? Do you have the 23andMe to prove it?
I think, you know, during my career and my family, for that matter's career, there was a lot of downtime. And when we were boring them, I think the media got curious. So they just started looking for sure. I've heard it. You know, my dad's heard it. He's the first one that told me, and he asked me about it. I said, I don't know, Dad. I've never checked into that. But when my time up in Seattle, some of the beat writers came to me one day and they said, you know, we did some digging and you're a direct descendant of Daniel Boone. And I said, really? They said, yeah, we did the research. So from what I'm told, yeah, we are. But I can't confirm it. I don't have the actual data in hand.
I think it's so much better that way. It's on other people to disprove it.
I like that. Yeah, they did the work.
Yeah.
Right, right. And I can just, you know, hey, yeah, it's a really cool thing. If it's true, I didn't say it was true, but yeah, you got other. So like I said, when baseball gets boring or I was in a slump, I think that was something for them to do on the side.
Yeah, so basically, I mean, your descendants founded Kentucky, which means Bengals fans thank you everywhere.
That's right. That's right. And I got to play in Cincinnati for a few years.
Look
so Kentucky right over the river. So, yeah.
Brett, was yesterday the Guardians' chance to steal the series?
No, I look at these series. They're all really interesting in their own way, you know. But for me, at this stage, I look at two teams that I think are the better team. I think Cleveland's a better team. I think they're going to win this series. But the whole X factor to me with this Detroit ball club, who, by the way, they played something ridiculous down the stretch. Like, they went on a 31-11 run to just qualify for the postseason. That being said, I mean, they were hot going into the postseason. They played really well. I look at the game yesterday, and the X factor for me with that Detroit ball club is Skubal. So I figure when Skubal pitches, they're going to win. And they ended up pulling it out yesterday, dramatic home run against Clase. He hasn't given up too many of those. But Detroit wins the game, but they have to win when Skubal pitches. And the thing for Detroit is they've got to find a win in the next two games just to get them to game five, because they can get Skubal back on the mound again. I think if Cleveland lets one get away of the next two, it's going to be a dogfight. But for me, Cleveland's a better ball club. I mean, they both have really good bullpens. Cleveland, in my opinion, is the superior. But Detroit's pretty good in their own right. But I just think the team, start to finish, everything, taking everything into consideration, I think the Guardians are a better team.
Yeah, so by that logic, though, so the Guardians have to win the next two, or you feel like the advantage goes heavily to Detroit?
Yeah, I really think they do. I think in both leagues, AL and NL, the one pitcher that stands above everybody else, in my opinion, is Skubal. He's the X factor. He's the Jason DeGrom when he's healthy type guy. It's just, you've got the aces. You know, you've got the Gerrit Coles of the world for the Yankees. You've got a Michael King who's become an ace in San Diego. There's no Glass now with the Dodgers now, so Flaherty's their ace. But you think of all the aces in this postseason, and I think Skubal is the one guy that kind of separates himself, is kind of above that top tier. And if you get him to a game five and you get Skubal on the mound, man, then it becomes tough sledding for the Cleveland Indians, or Cleveland Indians. I'm still saying Indians for the Guardians, but I think they're going to do everything to avoid that, and I think there's a good chance that Cleveland's going to win the next.
Brett Boone on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline Insider Calls, brought to you by Grainger. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers professional-grade supplies and solution made for everyday industry and backed by product experts. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. So I want to play out the scenario in the ninth inning. Clase on the bump. He put a man on first, a man on third. Kerry Carpenter, a lefty, probably one of their more prolific power bats, coming up with two outs. There's been some suggestion, instead of pitching to Carpenter, do you walk him, walk the bases full because you only need one out, and then you have righty-righty with Matt Vierling going against Class A. Do you think it would have made more sense to walk Carpenter to get to Vierling, or do you think that that Vogt made the right decision just letting Class A pitch to Carpenter?
Yeah, I think Vogt made the right decision. I mean, you got to consider who's on the mound for you. And we're not talking about a really good closer. We're talking about the best closer in the game of baseball right now. With all the success he's had, you know, sub-1 ERA for the year, one of the great closer years of all time. You put it in his hands, and he decides. You've got so much trust in him, and that's baseball, and that's why this postseason has been so exciting, and it's a lot of fun. It's, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, that's probably one of the most improbable things. I was sitting there. I was in the Atlanta airport watching that, and that's like the last thing on earth I thought was going to happen is he's going to hit a home run right there, and they're going to end up winning the game. So, no, I just think that was – it's kind of one of those really awesome moments for the postseason. But no, I got Clase on the mound. I let him handle business, and I don't worry about walking it.
Brett, is it bad for baseball the way that they're doing the Tigers that are? They're doing Scooble, and then every other game is basically just an opener, and no one sees the lineup a second time through. Like, if this works and they go to the World Series and they win it, I have a feeling we might be hitting a point where you just have one ace, maybe two, and then every other game is just an opener. And I don't know that I love that for the sport.
I don't like it, and I think Tampa Bay started that years ago. But they've proven that's not going to work for the long term. I don't think that works. It might work in a you know, in a game here and there. But if you make that a part of your formula, I don't think that's good, and I don't think it's going to work. The reason I don't think it's going to work is the best pitchers in the world are starting pitchers. Okay, and they're starting pitchers for a reason. I think when you hand it over a bullpen and you go, even if you have a really good bullpen, inning here, inning there, bullpen guys tend to do what more? They walk more. More players. They put more players on base. So I just don't think that's the format. I think you always have to have a starter. I think the great teams, and I think history will prove it out, the teams that have gone to the World Series, won the World Series, always have that real difference maker ace, or maybe two. You know, you go back to my generation, it was Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling in 2001. And they went, you know, they both went on 3 days rest, and they made it a real short series and tough. You know, and not necessarily you have to be the best team, but if you've got a couple aces like that, it really makes a difference. I think pitching and the best pitching in the postseason is always going to trump the best offense or even the best bullpen. Now, in 2024, because of finances in today's game are put in the bullpen, I think bullpens play a more prolific role. But I think over the course of time, I'll take the two aces on a team in the postseason over anything else. Statistic-wise, yeah, a given year here and there, you're going to have a miracle run, an Arizona Diamondback of a year ago. They're two games away from winning the World Series. They by far didn't have the best roster, best pitching staff, but they caught some lightning in a bottle and they made a run and they got close. But I think that's the exception, not the rule. I'll take the aces and go from there, and you take your opener. And over time, I think my aces are going to be your opener.
Brett, looking to the NL, the Padres-Dodgers series, very chippy at 1-1. There was the video of Manny Machado. Did he throw the ball at the Dodgers dugout? Jack Flaherty and Machado having words here. Do you think Machado actually could get suspended for this, or do you think this is much ado about nothing?
I definitely saw it, and everybody's going to have their take. I think Machado, he wasn't throwing the ball at someone to hit them or there's any in his mind, he wasn't trying to hurt anybody. I think he was trying to make a point, like, oh, just a little dig here, like Tatis in the outfield dancing to the crowd. You know, he's just kind of provoking them. There was no real malice there, but at the same time, it's a gesture. I don't think I'd do it. There's always a backstory. There's always a history. I don't know what Robertson Machado's history is. But Flaherty kind of out of nowhere, and once again, I never like to jump on the moment, say, oh, why did he do that? He was wrong. There's always a backstory. You never know what happened. You never know what happened on the way into the ballpark that morning in the tunnel. You know, something that we don't know about could have happened. To see Flaherty punch him out and to have that type of reaction, there had to be a little bit of a backstory there. Why would you do that? Machado didn't look at him. Machado didn't do anything wrong in that situation for Flaherty to have that type of reaction. So I think coupled with that and the emotion of the game and the fans in L.A. getting involved, I think Machado at the time was, oh, I'm going to give you a little dig right here because of how I feel you've been treating me right here. So I think it was just a knee-jerk reaction. But today's game, that's what we've become. I mean, years ago, Griffey did that commercial, said, let the kids play. Okay. It's not like my generation. I don't like all the things that go on, but I've also learned as an ex-player and now analyst that it's not my game anymore. This is their game. History will judge each and every one of our generations, but when you start saying, hey, there's no unwritten rules in baseball anymore, and you're going to play the game, hey, the rails, you come off the rails sometimes. So as much as baseball wants this kid-like and fun and everybody celebrating everything, well, there's a price to be paid, because if you let it go too far, there's really no guardrails to keep everybody in check.
Brett, great stuff, buddy. We'll catch up with you next week, but we appreciate your time, sir. Get some rest.
Yeah, I got a feeling. I think Cleveland's still going to be standing in a week, so I'll see you guys next week.
I love that energy. Brett Boone there on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. That was Odyssey, MLB Insider Brett Boone. Insider calls presented by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Sometimes we get it right. I tried the Daniel Boone thing. I don't think we got that right.
What did we get wrong?
No. I think we tried, but it was like, I think we just kind of came to, well, I'm not going to fact check it because it sounds pretty cool. So I'm just going to go with what other people say.
I think we thought it was way cooler than he did.
I think you're 100% right.
I think he was very unimpressed with his own history.
You, sir, are the great, great, great something of one of the founders of this country. And he's like, maybe not.
He's like, we never really looked into it. I don't know if I really wanted to look into it. It's, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Do you know how long I would spend on history websites if I found, like, if I had a fraction of that type of history, I'd be all over it. I might start a museum.
Do you know how much I'd flex in other people's faces? Like, I'm
all
sorry.
The time.
Was your great, 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 great grandfather in the Revolutionary War? Get lost.
Take a hike. I founded this country.
Yeah. What have you done? Two losses, two completely different takeaways. That's next on 92.3 The Fan.